from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into yet another edition of Preds Insiders right here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday evening here in Smashville. The Preds defeat the Dallas Stars Saturday 1-0. Back-to-back shutouts for UC Saros. Four big points in the two wins against the Dallas Stars. Welcoming in Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast. Robbie, how are we doing this evening?
Lovely. Not as lovely as the Predators are after this weekend, but I'm doing very well.
Not as lovely as the weather was.
Oh, man. It was wonderful yesterday. It was awesome. I was outside running around my little 10-pound dog, just exercising in freedom of warm weather. It was awesome. It really hasn't even been that cold this winter, but man, was it glorious to see the sunshine and 70 degrees. It did my heart well.
I'm sure Abby really enjoyed it.
She was loving it, loving every second of it.
Well, before we get to the hockey action from the weekend, I know the two of us both spent a lot of time out in the community this weekend. You were in East Nashville for a lot of Saturday. I helped the community resource center there in near downtown, and it was really cool to see the amount of people that were donating their time to volunteer in the tornado relief efforts all over the city. You could tell that a large portion of our city, of our region, were helping out. There were even people up from Florida,
yeah,
helping out at the CRC. Really cool to see this community come together after the tough events of Tuesday morning.
It was awesome. It really was. In my church, like we got some people together. We grilled some hot dogs, put together some lunches, and we probably made, I don't know, 3,500 hot dogs on Saturday and sent those out.
That's
throughout
awesome.
Different neighborhoods, Mount Juliet, Donelson, East Nashville, Germantown, all over the place. And just walking around East Nashville, you know, there were so many people out there that some people, like, we would go up and offer lunches to. And just like, no, we just had somebody offer us and we ate a minute ago, because there were so many different people out there helping out. So not only from just a, you know, a relief standpoint in terms of cleaning up debris, cleaning up tree limbs, sawing things down, helping people kind of tear some things away from their house so they can begin the process of rebuilding. There were plenty of volunteers in that area as well, but also just simple things you wouldn't think of bringing people food. There was one neighborhood in East Nashville where they set up on the corner and people brought their grills. They were grilling hamburgers for each other, frying fish. Somebody made jambalaya. Like, I mean, it was like a feast out there. It was awesome. So just really cool to see. And the one thing that stood out to me is, like, you went up and you talked to these people who had just had their homes destroyed and their lives turned upside down, and every one of them talked about how lucky they were. That was the thing that stood out to me. Like, you know, it's a bad situation, but they all knew that it could have been so much worse, and for a lot of people, it was a lot worse in terms of the loss of life. So a really humbling experience just walking around and experiencing that with these different people. But the spirit of our community in our area, I think, is undeniable. And I think that's what we all expected that when this happened. But seeing it in person, I think there's a lot of things that float around nowadays that kind of make you lose faith in humanity. When things like this happen, I mean, it does a pretty good job, at least for me, in terms of restoring that.
Well said. It was definitely a humbling experience. And I, you know, at least for me, it was the first opportunity to see some of it up close, because we were so inundated with work schedules last week that at least me personally, I wasn't able to see much of it up close. And I think it kind of sets in even more when you see it up close of just how many people were affected. You know, it's a large number, but when you see it up close in the different parts of the city, North Nashville, Germantown, East Nashville, and all the way from Donelson to Hermitage to Mount Juliet to Lebanon, when you see it up close, it really does set in of how tragic that was and how big of an effect it had, just wide-ranging in terms of number of houses, number of people.
Yeah, and the volunteers is just incredible. Like, we left East Nashville at one point in the middle of the day and tried to go over to Donelson. And we got to Donaldson, and the entire neighborhood had been fed. They're like, yeah, we're all taken care of. Thanks. That's just cool. Like,
and they're turning away volunteers.
They're turning away volunteers. That's awesome. Like, yeah. That does not happen in other places. I think people should take stock of that and realize how lucky we are to live here.
Very well said. And if you would like to continue to look at ways to donate, if you're still trying to donate some items, you can bring them by the station at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, just around the corner from the airport. We are taking donations from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Anything from tarps to work gloves to laundry detergent, just everyday items.
Trash bags, yeah.
Yeah, trash bags. If you're looking to donate those items and don't know where to go with them, bring them by the station here, and we will make sure they get in the proper hands here later this week. While a lot of people were volunteering, including ourselves, on Saturday afternoon, the Preds go down to Dallas and get a big 1-0 victory. Back-to-back shutouts for the first time in UC Saros' career. Thought the Preds played that typical, quote-unquote, road game. Mm-hmm. They get the lead, and they sat on it a little bit. The Stars definitely had a few surges there, especially in the third period. Saros making 37 saves. The Preds, after losing 3 in a row, they turn around and beat the Stars, who had their number in the calendar year of 2019, plus New Year's Day at the Winter Classic. They shut out the Stars back-to-back games, 2-0 on Thursday, 1-0 on Saturday. 4 big points for the Preds collected against the Stars.
4 huge points, and it kind of goes along with the story of the season, right? Like, you think that you're starting to see that, I don't know. They've lost 3 games in a row. They got hammered by Edmonton, lost a tough one in Minnesota. Like, maybe this is when the wheels are starting to fall off a little bit. You got 2 games coming up against a team who's really owned you over the course of the past year. We probably should have known at that point they were going to win both of these games. That's how this season has gone for the Predators. It's been such a roller coaster ride, such an up and down experience, and 2 really good defensive efforts. Saros was really good when he had to be, but I thought especially Thursday night at home, they played really well defensively. You never really felt like Dallas was in control of that game. I mean, you never felt like the Predators were on the ropes of losing their lead or anything like that. So really good back-to-back performances by the Predators. Power play goals are all 3 of those goals. That's big, because we know what a topic of conversation the power play has been around here for basically more than a calendar year now. Nice to see that start to come through in a good way. Duchesne's been playing really well the last couple of games, I thought. Forsberg gets off the snide Thursday night. Those are the things you're looking for. And some signs of life, maybe, of these guys coming to life a little bit.
You could see the relief Philip Forsberg's face and just his actions after he scored that goal Thursday night on the power play to make it 1-0.
Yeah, he had that smile on his face, like, thank you, finally.
Thank you, Lord.
Because he had a chance like 2 minutes before that was just glorious. Yes. Chance. I mean, the net was wide open. It couldn't have been any more wide open, and he sends it wide. And I literally looked down press row at Bridgestone Arena, and I looked over to Adam Vig, and I said, that's it. He's never going to score again. This is it. It's done. And then that one that he scores on is, quite honestly, not that great of a shot. It just found its way through. It doesn't matter. You just take him any way you can get him. Duchesne scores. Duchesne has another assist on Saturday on Ryan Ellis's goal, which was kind of a harmless shot from the corner, found its way in.
I don't know how Bishop didn't stop that puck.
I went back and watched it later after we got home, and I saw it go in. I was like, huh? That was in the net? How about that? What a shot by Ryan Ellis. That's how good he is. But it just continues to show how important he's been since he's come back in the lineup. Second star of the week last week in the NHL. I mean, he's putting together points at a pretty great pace this year. I mean, look, let's be honest. Last year in the playoffs, especially after that series, I was worried about Ryan Ellis. You know, he didn't look right optically. He didn't look like, he was the same player. And this year when he's been healthy, I mean, he's been outstanding.
A lot of the talk over the offseason was over Ellis's contract and the fact that it had not kicked in yet until this season. At least what we've seen out of Ryan Ellis this season doesn't make makes the contract look a little better.
You feel a whole lot better
than
now.
It did last summer.
There's no question about it, because injuries were a concern. And look, there's still a concern to some degree.
Sure.
I mean, there's not much you can do about the concussion this year, taking an elbow to the side of the head. Like, that is what it is.
But every season, it feels like something different with him on the injury front.
Yeah, so that part's still a concern. But the on-ice product looks and feels better this year. I know you look at the point total last year and everything, his career high in points, his analytics, like, they weren't that bad. But something just looked off. This year, he looks like Ryan Ellis that we've grown accustomed to seeing.
Ryan Ellis, 9 points in 9 games since he returned from that concussion that he suffered from Corey Perry at the Winter Classic, and Roman Josi had a nice cross check to Corey Perry's head. I know a lot of Preds fans enjoyed that. Roman Yossi's pocketbook did not enjoy that fine, $5,000 for that cross check. Did you feel like the punishment fit the crime there?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I thought it was a cross check to the face, so you can't just let that go. I also was pretty sure that Predators fans were going to raise $5,000 immediately in the aftermath of the game to send to Roman Josi. Attention, Roman Josi, 501 Broadway, Nashville, Tennessee. But, you know, look, it's one of those things. I watched it happen. Perry sold it. I mean, he definitely sold it. He got hit right in the face.
1,000%.
I'm not sure it was as bad as it looked. But when you get the cross check going and it ends up hitting somebody in the mouth, I'm not surprised that he got fined for it.
And both Thursday night and Saturday night, props to Jared Tenorti and Corbinian Holzer for standing up to Perry and making it known that his actions on New Year's Day were not appreciated. And really having the back of Ryan
Ellis. I think Jared Tenorti wanted a whole lot more than he got. Thursday night, he was chasing him into the corner.
Yep.
Saturday, he went after him again, and Corey Perry was smart enough to just kind of tackle him down to the ice so he didn't get punched right in the eyeball. But Jared Tenorti, there's no question. I think he earned some stripes with his teammates. Remember the St. Louis game?
Yeah.
He went after Robert Bortuzzo and Victor Arvidsson, that whole situation. So Tenorti's become kind of the, hey, you're going to have to answer to me guy on this Predators team. They really didn't have that before. It's nice to see him coming in and kind of filling that role.
For sure. I legit had a dream Saturday night into Sunday morning that Corey Perry played for the Predators and in a single game was making turnover after turnover, and Preds fans were just railing him on Twitter, and it ended up in a lot of goals allowed.
That may be a sign that you're watching a little too much hockey, my friend. You're starting dreaming about Corey Perry in a Preds uniform.
Probably.
You know, I made the case for that this past offseason.
I think
many
Preds
people fans hated me. They're like, we're not signing Corey Perry. Oh, my God. Not going to happen.
He hasn't really been a difference maker Dallas Stars.
Pretty good at injury.
Yet another power forward in the league that once they fall off the cliff, there's no looking back. Yeah. Wayne Simmonds, David Backes, Andrew Ladd, Milan Lucic. You can add Corey Perry's name to that.
Steep fall, my friend.
Yep.
Steep fall.
100%. Coming up next, we didn't spend a lot of time on UC Saros, but we will after this. Has UC Saros taken the next step in wrangling the starter's position from Pekka? We'll get into that next. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry for all your dental needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Kerry Zier, Remax Elite. And Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. Ryan Porth joined by Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast here on Preds Insiders. Reacting to the Preds' shutout victory over the Dallas Stars Saturday afternoon down in Big D, 1-0. They shut out the Stars as well Thursday night by a score of 2-0. And sometimes it's not who you play, but when you play them. And the Dallas Stars right now are struggling. The Dallas Stars have 4 goals in their last 4 home games. So they've hit a bit of an offensive dry spell. But credit to the Nashville Predators for taking advantage of that and accumulating 4 big points in the standings. As we enter Monday night's action, they are tied with Vancouver Canucks for the 2nd wild card in the West, but so are the Winnipeg Jets. It is a total cluster in the Western Conference standings. Minnesota at 77, Vancouver, Nashville, and Winnipeg all tied at 76, Arizona at 74. So the road doesn't get any easier for the Preds, who embark on a 4-game road trip coming up tomorrow night starting in Montreal. And Robbie, the biggest reason why the Preds accumulated those 4 points against the Dallas Stars these last 2 games is UC Saros between the pipes. And UC Saros has been starting a lot more games recently than Pekka has. And now that Saros has posted back-to-back shutouts for the first time in his career, it feels like he's the guy now.
It feels like the changing of the guard is kind of complete. You know what I mean? Like, we've always kind of been waiting of, even during this stretch of the last month and a half, where, Saros is playing a lot lately, but you know, he's just the hot guy right now. He's the goaltender they're riding with. Not really willing to say that he's the starter and has supplanted Pekka Rinne. I think I'm willing to go there now. I mean, he's the starter. I think he's going to be the starter for the rest of this season. And based on the results as of late, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, he's been really good, not even just these two shutouts against Dallas. I think largely since basically John Hines has taken over for the most part, he's been really, really good.
So in the last 17 games, UC Saros has started 13 of them.
Yeah.
And in those 13 starts, he's played 15 games because Pecorino has been pulled twice in four of his starts. In the last 15 games played, UC Saros has a 9-4 record with a 2.02 goals against average and a .940 save percentage, and is coming off back-to-back shutouts. I would be shocked if UC Saros doesn't start, what, three of these four games this week?
Oh, yeah. I think you have to at this point. With as well as he's playing of late, you just got to ride that hot hand. And we spent all year long talking about, you know, Matt Duchene needs to play better, Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson. All of that is true, and all of that's going to be important as they move ahead here. Nothing's more important than your goaltender playing well. And that was bugging them November, December, January, early part of January this year. I mean, let's be honest. And people sometimes don't like to have this conversation around here because goaltending has been so important for this franchise, and Pecorine has been such a beloved figure here, and he always will be. But goaltending was a big problem for them this year for a long time. Saros wasn't playing well. Rene wasn't playing well. And as much as we talk about the other guys needing to be more productive offensively, that's been a big part of it too.
Sure.
And now that you've started to see that come around a little bit more, they're winning games with more regularity. You know, they're giving themselves a chance to win every night. The Edmonton game withstanding, I understand that. But Saros is a guy where, let's be honest, earlier this year, there were questions kind of starting to pop up about, I don't know about this. Like, is he really the long-term solution and goal here? Because he struggled to start the season and quite honestly really didn't figure it out until late December, early January when he started to play better in net. He's now looking like, I think, the guy that everybody thought he could be. Now, the .940 save percentage is ridiculous. I mean, that's not going to be something he sustains throughout his career, because if he does, you're talking about like the greatest goalie of all time at that point. But I do think you feel much more comfortable now, not only this year about UC Saros, but more importantly, I think, long-term, that he could be and probably will be the guy as they move forward.
Saros has typically been a slow starter in his career, and you mentioned riding the hot hand. I don't see how you can't do that right now. And I brought this up with Adam Vingan last week, and this would have been last Wednesday, so 2 days after the 8-3 debacle against the Edmonton Oilers. And I mentioned this with Adam, that Monday night game against the Oilers in the third period, as it just unraveled, five consecutive goals in what, less than 6 minutes.
Yeah.
That felt like the end of the Pecorine era. Mm-hmm. We were watching it in real time. And the previous two starts for Pecorine, he had been really good. Really good. But there have been way too many clunkers like that from Pecorine this season. And that just, you just felt like you were watching old Pecorine.
Yeah.
And not the old Pecorine that used to be the eraser and used to just stand on his head and make a lot of saves. I mean, some of those goals that he gave up that night were just soft as you know what.
Yeah.
And it felt like we were watching the end. And I feel like it's even more so the end after seeing UC Saros play between the pipes ever since then.
Yeah, and that's not to say that he's not going to have another opportunity this year, because they've got back-to-back games coming up. They're still going to need him. I mean, the games that he is going to play this year, I mean, every point's going to matter. So he's going to have to come in, and he's going to have to play well for this group. But I would agree. I think watching Saros, how he's responded since then, and just the way last game went for Pekka, I mean, it almost just kind of felt like after that you looked around and you said, it's time. Like, it's time for Saros to be the guy. And, you know, what that means for Pekka and his long-term future next year, like, I don't know. It's too early to get into all that. But I do think that UC Saros has proven with his play that he deserves to be the guy moving forward. And a lot of people have had this conversation, like, what happens when the playoffs come around and let's say the Predators make it? Which goalie do you go with? I mean, I think there's a pretty clear answer to that right now. I think Saros has to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
If game one of the playoffs were starting today, I mean, how could you not go with Saros at this point?
Sure.
I mean, to me, that conversation, I think, has solved itself.
Well, and UC Saros, back-to-back shutouts again, first time in his career that he's had that, but the defense has also played very well in front of him, like you mentioned last segment. And there's been a little bit of a change with the defensive lineup with John Hines. Corbinian Holzer has drawn into the lineup Jared Tenorti and him have been paired on the third pair. And maybe this is now the defensive lineup that can help them win games, because it's been all over the place all season long. You've had the Ellis injury mixed in, but it feels like they're now starting to figure it out defensively.
I got a stat for you, Porth. You ready for this?
Go for it.
The Predators are undefeated and unscored upon with my man Corbinian Holzer in the lineup. What do you say about that?
The best trade deadline acquisition last week.
Best one by far. The results don't lie, my friend. Undefeated, unscored upon, my man Corbinian Holzer coming in making an impact. I kid about that, but it is interesting how the defense pairs have kind of shaken out since Ryan Ellis has come back in the fold. Him and Josi back together. I think that kind of stacks everything where it should be. Fabro back with Ekholm the past couple games. That takes Ekholm off of his right side, playing on his opposite hand, to putting him back in his more natural position on the left side. I think Fabro's played really well with Ekholm in the last couple of games. To Nordy and Holzer, I mean, you're going to look at those guys analytically, and it's not going to be pretty.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing about that that's going to be, you know, really sexy to the eyes in terms of the way they play the game. But they are both huge, and there's something that counts for something.
Well,
and
it counted for something Saturday as they stood up to Corey Perry.
Absolutely. And it's one thing when you're running a man-to-man scheme. You got two guys like that out there, probably going to get beat at some point. They're not the most fleet of foot, and that's no disrespect to them. They're just not that fast.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing a zone, I mean, basically one of those guys is just standing in front of the net all the time. And when you have big guys like that, they can clear out space around the net. That can be valuable. So I'm not saying that, you know, Tenorti and Holzer are going to be like the long-term third-pairing solution here for the Predators. But I do think the way that they play, there's more that you can do with that running the defensive schemes now that they're running under John Himes than you could before. And like I said, numbers don't lie, baby. Undefeated, unscored upon. Holzer.
And look, all you need them to do is not screw up.
Yep.
Seriously. There have been way too many times this season where the third defense pair has screwed up and they've put either Juuse Saros or Pekkarinen in a non-favorable position where they're having to stand on their head because of them. All you need to Nordy and Holzer is clear out in front of the net, get the puck out of the zone, and just be safe.
Well, and let's be honest, like, they're not going to play that much down the stretch here because the closer we get down the stretch and the closer the playoffs are here, if I'm John Hines, I mean, I am putting Ellis and Josi out there. I'm getting them as close to 30 minutes as they can take on a nightly basis. Not going
to
be every night, and hopefully you can restrict that if you get out and you're in a big game and you've got a big lead or something like that. But those two, Ekholm, Fabro, I'm playing them as much as I possibly can. So then you're not really asking Tenorti and Holzer to do all that much. Like you said, Porth, you just got to go out there and not screw it up. And that's, I have long contended, that is the sole purpose of the third pair. Just get out there and don't screw up this game.
Yeah.
If you do that, and if you're the Predators, you feel very comfortable about your other options you put on the ice at that point.
Coming up next, what are the biggest differences that Robbie has seen between John Hines and Peter Laviolette? That's coming up next. He's Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth alongside Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast here with you on this Monday evening. The Preds road trip gets underway tomorrow night against the Montreal Canadiens. Pre-game at 5, puck drop at 6 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Shea Weber, if he plays every game the rest of the season, Robbie, you were the one who discovered this little nugget. If he does not miss a game between now and, what is it, April 1st?
April 1st.
When Montreal comes into town, then Shea Weber's 1,000th game will be played here in Nashville.
I'm so excited. I miss Shea Weber so much. He's so awesome. What do we think the chances are that he cries? I mean, I think I've seen him cry one time in my life.
He won't cry.
I doubt it.
No.
But it'd be a really cool night. And like, a playoff race going on. You're presumably still right there in the thick of things.
Sure.
A memorable night for Shea Weber would be awesome. Hopefully he stays healthy and can get to that point.
I think we all do. That would be a really cool moment for his 1,000th game to be played in Smashville. We'll get to the road trip here in a little bit. But John Hines is 15-11-1 in 27 games as head coach. 12 of those 15 wins have come by just one goal. So they've been winning a lot of close games where beforehand they were losing a lot of those close games. And I was crunching some numbers earlier, and I was a little bit surprised, Robbie, to see that John Hines since he took over as head coach has a negative goal differential compared to when Peter Laviolette was head coach. He had a positive goal differential this season. John Hines, offensively, this Preds team is averaging 2.55 goals per game, but they're giving up 2.89. Under Peter Laviolette's direction, in the first half of the season, they were scoring 3.46 goals per game and giving up 3.34. So, obviously, they have sacrificed some offense for some defense under John Hines. Do you feel like this is the best route for this team to take if they are to make any sort of noise down the stretch and in the playoffs?
Well, as currently constructed and how their top players are playing, yeah. I mean, I think this is the route you have to go. If your top players, like Johansson and Forsberg, Duchesne, Arvidsson, they were being consistently productive, then yeah, you could probably afford to be a little bit more offensive with your mindset and your approach. We all know that hasn't been the case, and that's not a John Hines thing. That's been the case pretty much all season long with those guys in terms of how inconsistent they've been with their production. So I think defensively, that's the route you have to take. You got to clamp down defensively. The goaltending has gotten a ton better since John Hines has been here. Now, how much does that have to do with John Hines, and how much is that UC Soros just playing a lot better? I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there's kind of a combination that goes on there as well. But I do think defensively, the way they played against the Stars the last couple of games, that's kind of the blueprint of how they're going to want to play. I mean, they're going to give up chances. John Hines talked about it when he got here. He's not really that concerned about zone time that they give up. He's concerned about quality looks that they give up. On the rush, I think they've gotten a ton better at kind of limiting those chances off the rush. Because think back early in the season. I mean, that's where they were getting killed, was on the rush. They turned the puck over, trying to make that play in the offensive zone, and it would be 3-on-1 coming back the other way, and your goalie just has no chance. They've gotten a lot better at managing the puck, making sure they're not giving up as many of those odd man rushes. And when they do, they're able to defend it a lot better. I mean, Ryan Ellis by himself has defended a few of them that I can recount as of late. So I think those areas have been added. We actually had Adam Vingan and myself had Mike Kelly from the Point Hockey join us on the Smash Brothers this past week. And we kind of analytically went through the Predators offensively under Hines and under Laviolette. And pretty much every category you can think of favors Peter Laviolette in terms of their offensive attack. I mean, we've made a lot about Hines focusing more on quality and getting to the middle of the ice. There have been occasions this year where that's been better under Hines than it has Laviolette. By and large, it's pretty close, and the quantity was a whole lot more under Peter Laviolette than it has been. So you're concerned about that in terms of how much time they're spending in the D zone. But once they're there, I think they're doing a much better job of defending while they're there. So it's kind of take your pick at this point. I think with the way the Predators stars aren't producing, you have to focus in on defense. Now, the counter argument to that I know fans listening right now may have, okay, well, if you're not playing your star players as much, how can you expect them to produce? And their ice time with Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, Arvidsson, all these guys, their ice time has gone down under John Hines compared to what it was with Peter Laviolette. So that's kind of the chicken or the egg conversation. What has to come first? The production or the opportunity? And that's kind of what the Predators are faced with right now.
So do you think John Hines is taking the approach of these guys aren't producing more, I can't have them on the ice as much and rely on them? Or is he solely going by the system, wanting to be more defensive, and that's why they're getting less ice time?
I think it's the first. I think he is. He's reined their ice time back a little bit because of their lack of production. And then,
so basically rewarding good play.
Rewarding good play. And I think that's why you see Bonino out there a lot. I think that's why you've seen Turris and Granlund get time on the penalty kill when they weren't sniffing time on the penalty kill before. I think that's a lot of what he's done. Now, I like that to a certain degree. I also would say if you want your top players to snap out of it at some point, you got to give them a lot of opportunity to go out there and do it.
Right.
And that's got to be the next step for John Hines, is I think there's got to be some give and take there. Yes, it's on the players. They've got to make use of the time that they're given. But I think you also, as a coach, have to be realistic and know that this team is not going that far if those four guys specifically don't get it figured out and don't start to produce. And you got to give them some more leeway, I think, than you would maybe with some of your other players. Maybe that's not right. Maybe that's not fair. But based on their salary, based on how productive they've been in their career, sometimes I think that's the approach you have to go. He sent those messages already. I think the players are starting to get it. Now you got to give them those opportunities to get that ice time back.
Yeah, I don't think he can afford to keep even benching guys, let alone limiting ice time. You know, the fact that there have been a handful of games here since he took over back in early January, where, say, a Ryan Johansson has been benched in the middle of a game, or Matt Duchene has seen his ice time go way down in the middle of a game. He cannot afford to continue to have that happen. Even if they're not playing up to their capability, you need to keep giving those guys ice time, because those are the guys that are going to make a difference offensively. You can't keep going back to that Bonino, Smith, Grimaldi well and expecting them to be your top producers on offense.
Yeah, and look, those guys have been a great story all year, but if Bonino, Grimaldi, and Smith is your best line moving forward, I mean, that doesn't spell very good future for the Nashville Predators. They've got to have their top guys figured out. I mean, they're going to sink or swim with those guys, and I get it. As a coach, you want to come in, you want to set a new culture, you want to establish that, and to his credit, I think it takes some guts to do that, and he did it, and I'm glad that he did it. But I think after a while, you've got to just let that sit in and go, okay, I've sent my message. You just got to let your players play the game. And then if it doesn't work out and they're continuing to not be productive, guess what? You've got an offseason to figure things out in terms of what direction you want to go with the future of this club.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley here of NHL.com, the Locked On Predators podcast. And you can also catch him with Adam Vigan Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m. on the Smash Brothers. Heard right here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Ryan Porth. And when you look at John Hines and the fact that when he took over, things were looking very bleak for the Preds, and I mentioned that 15-11-1 record earlier this segment, this team is now right in the thick of it when it comes to the playoffs. And it feels like 08, it feels like 09, it feels like 2010, those seasons where they were scratching and clawing down the stretch every game, a huge 2 points on the line, you were scoreboard watching every night. It feels like those seasons all over again. And yes, this team should not be in this situation given the talent on paper with this team. But here we are, 14 games left, 6 at home, 8 on the road, 5 teams for 2 spots. You look at Minnesota, Vancouver, Nashville, Winnipeg, Arizona in the current wild card chase. I could see Vancouver leapfrogging Calgary at some point, so we do have to include Calgary in this conversation as well. Calgary letting one slip away last night against Vegas. Vegas scoring a quirky goal with a minute left to win that game in regulation. But when you look at sportsclubstats.com and you factor in those 5 teams, Minnesota, Vancouver, Nashville, Winnipeg, and Arizona, Vancouver has a 77.9% chance of making the Stanley Cup playoffs. I was a little surprised.
They're very confident.
When you look at that number for the Canucks and put that up against the Preds, which 42.2%. Minnesota, 42%. Winnipeg, 38.7%. Arizona, 29.2%. It's going to be a dogfight down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Conference. And I agree. It does feel like those 08, 09, 10 years, and then you look at the payroll and you're like, how in the world does this feel like those years? Like, it should not be the case.
You don't have David Legwand and Marty Erat on your first line.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. Yeah. I mean, the first line is a little bit more talented, a little bit more financially compensated, as they say. But I do think, I mean, given the strange nature of this season, I mean, think about it. Your top players for a large part of this season haven't been anywhere near as productive as you think they are or think they can be. Your goaltending for a large period was awful this year. You have fired a coach. You brought in a new coach. And here they are, and they're right there in the playoff race. I mean, I think, yeah, that's disappointing and that's maddening that the season has gone the way that it's gone. But I think it also illustrates the talent that they have, that they're still there. Like, I can't believe they're still there, to be quite frank with you. Like, I thought there's no, like, coaching. If you told me before the season, you're changing your coaches, your goaltending's been awful for 3 months, your top players in Ryan Johansson, Forsberg, Duchene, Arvidsson are not anywhere near as productive as they normally are, I would say, well, I mean, they're at the bottom of the Western Conference. And the fact that they're still right there, I think, is encouraging. And you'd always know if you're a Predators fan, you have more room to grow. And that room's running out. You got 14 games left to do it, but you're right there in the thick of things. And I think at this point, just based on the way the season has gone, it's going to come down to that last week. I mean, that Minnesota game on April 4th, that could be a play-in game. I mean, it really could. So it's going to be really exciting to follow down the stretch here.
Looking at 94 points being the magic number to get in, you've got 14 games remaining. So if you're trying to get 18 more points out of those 14 games, then you need to look at, what, an 8-4-2 record down the
Something
stretch.
Like that, yeah.
This team, since the start of February, has had stretches where you feel like they could do that. And then you have that 3-game losing streak Colorado, Edmonton, and Minnesota that make you believe that they wouldn't do that. So, look, it's all about how they're going to play in those last couple weeks of the season, because there hasn't been – nobody's separating themselves in this wild card pack.
You also got to win games against the right teams. Like, it's one thing to lose a game against Toronto on Thursday. That doesn't hurt you that bad in terms of four-point games. You start losing to Minnesota in regulation and Arizona and Winnipeg, that's where you get in trouble. You got to win the right games, too.
If you're going to split the back-to-back this weekend at Columbus at Minnesota, you'd rather lose in Columbus and win in Minnesota.
Beat Minnesota. It's very important, and do it in regulation.
For sure.
If you lose in overtime this week and against the Eastern Conference, who cares? Take your point and move on.
And to your point, they have games against these teams, most of these teams, remaining down the stretch. They go to Minnesota. They host Winnipeg. They go to Arizona. They
host Minnesota again.
So,
I mean, those are crucial. Got to get points in those games, and more importantly, if you win, need to win in regulation in those games.
Coming up next, there was an interesting report Saturday about the National Hockey League's reaction to the coronavirus. We're going to get Robbie Stanley's reaction to that and a whole lot more coming up next. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Now, this isn't official, right? Like, that was just an Elliot Freeman report. Yeah. The NHL hasn't made a statement on it, right?
Bettman said something, but he didn't really say anything about, hey, we love our media.
Right.
Thanks. Appreciate you.
Welcome back in Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and the Locked On Predators podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. He also hosts the Smash Brothers every Friday with Adam Vinken from 6 to 7 p.m. Coming up at 7 o'clock, it is Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann and company. So keep it locked right here with even more Preds talk coming up this evening. Now, Robbie, you have been a part of the media for a good decade now.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a report, I think Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet was the first one to put this out on Saturday, saying that the NHL was going to close locker rooms to the media to try to do everything in their power to limit the spreading of the coronavirus, which has been probably the number one topic in the whole world right now. Yes. with everything going on in Italy, in France, in China, and now spreading here into the United States of America. And Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, came out Saturday and he didn't deny that the NHL was closing its locker rooms. He said the NHL is, quote, considering every conceivable option, end quote, as it pertains to the coronavirus. Now, as a media member, Robbie, what were kind of your feelings when you saw this report surface? And if it does come to fruition that the NHL is going to officially close its locker rooms to the media and basically hold any media availabilities as a, quote, press conference outside the locker room or in a press room media room, whatever. What's kind of your reaction to that report that Elliot Friedman put out there Saturday?
Well, I understand it. Like, you know, we're in a situation now where, you know, whether it's the flu, coronavirus, whatever is going around, where you're always battling against protecting germs. And we've seen, you know, the Predators and NHL teams in general, they're in a tight space. You're around the same guys all the time. You're in a locker room where it's easy for disease to spread. I mean, look no further than the Nashville Predators. Yarncroak was sick. Bonino was sick. Rene was sick. I mean, they've had Johansson was sick. They've had a whole lot of sickness in there as of late. Obviously, that's a sign that disease in there can spread. My first reaction when I heard closing the locker rooms was, I understand it. You know, is there much of a difference between doing a media scrum in a locker room and doing a media scrum in a press conference setting? Probably not. Like, maybe you're somewhat of more of a distance away, but really not that much. And it's not like in a media scrum, we're sitting there in Roman Yossi's lap or anything like that. I mean, we're still a decent distance away. We're not sitting there spitting on each other, hopefully, unless things have gone really wrong in the post-game press conference. But I did understand it. I think it's a responsibility of the league to at least weigh every option that you have. As a media member, is it going to suck? Yeah, probably, because look, let's be honest, those like open session press conference settings where you've got every media member in there, they're all asking the same questions, there's a script, like nothing gets done in that. Like, it very rarely do you get some exhilarating content that comes out of that. Where you do get good content and good stories and guys to open up a little bit more is when you're in the locker room maybe it's a one-on-one setting. You're comfortable with the media member that's been in there for a long time, and you're more willing to sit down and talk in detail about things. You can ask follow-up questions. You don't have to worry about other, you know, 15 other media outlets sitting in there
sure.
and asking questions and it becoming really bogged down. So that part of it, from a fan standpoint, I mean, the level of the audio coming out of there, the stories coming out of there, it's not going to be the same if this happens. I can go on and tell you. At the end of the day, is it the world's biggest deal? No. I mean, you have to take precautions to keep other human beings safe. But I do think it will affect, if this goes into place, you know, some of your in-depth stories, especially when playoffs come along, because, you know, everybody takes such an interest in the playoffs and, you know, the grind it out, fight it back and forth series. Like, for instance, Johansson and Kessler. I mean, that was a big story a couple years ago. You know, talking to Johansson in the locker room after the game, you know, you're in a setting where the emotion is high, you're coming right off a game, and he's not afraid to say something in the media. Does he still say that? You know, after 15 minutes have gone by, he's cooled down, and he takes that long walk over to the press room where PR people are talking to him about a bunch of different things. Maybe, maybe not. But it's not the biggest deal in the world at the end of the day. But I do think those, like, everyday stories in terms of those really in-depth stories will probably go away when sure. this happens. Which, again, human beings and their safety is much more important than that.
I would agree with that. And the interesting thing that will be – the thing that will be interesting to monitor is whether any situation comes about with coronavirus
yeah.
that was proven to this person catching it at a sporting event.
Yeah.
If that happens, especially in this country, that's going to be opening a huge can of worms in terms of potential precautions being put in place, like in Italy. In Italy, until I believe in early April, there are no fans
yeah.
allowed to attend sporting events. So there's going to be soccer games, basketball games, what have you, in Italy, where the event is taking place in front of an empty stadium.
Yeah.
And, you know, this thing, this story is becoming bigger and bigger with each passing day. I do wonder if it's going to get to that point, maybe not in the National Hockey League, but the NCAA tournament is coming up, and that is a major event in this country.
Yeah.
I wonder if we're going to ever get to that point. I hope not. I hope the story becomes less and less
yeah.
of a deal as the days go along, as, you know, as opposed to the opposite happening, but I think that's when it's really going to kick into high gear in terms of how big of a story it is within sports in this country.
You heard some talk about that over the weekend with the NBA. I mean, the NBA was talking about it. I mean, there may come a point where fans can't come to the games. And they asked LeBron James of the Lakers about that. And he said, well, I mean, if that happens, I'm not playing. Like, sure. I play the game for the fans, which you certainly understand from his point of view. Like you said, you hope it doesn't get to that point, and you hope that, you know, we start to see a reverse in this trend and it starts to go the other way and becomes less and less of a big deal, number one, but less and less of a topic of conversation along with that. But, I mean, it's just the world we live in right now. I mean, there's a lot of panic. There's been deaths that have gone along with this disease. You know, you've got conflicting reports out there about, you know, what the actual danger level is with mm-hmm. this thing. And I think, like with anything, when you've got something new and maybe there's some uncertainty that goes along with it, people tend to panic. And I think we've seen a little bit of that as of late. And certainly, I think if you're a professional sports league, whether it's the NHL, the NBA, whatever, you want to do the best, and you want to take every precaution you can take to keep your athletes safe, to keep your fans safe, and even to keep your media members safe. I mean, that's something you have to worry about as well. So I know last week, I mean, Predators players, they weren't high-fiving each other. Like Nick Bonino, I saw in the locker room, like, stuck his foot up, and they gave basically a foot high-five to each other in the room. Like, they're taking precautions already and being instructed, like, hey, like, don't touch each other unless you absolutely have to. So there's already those that have gone into effect. Hopefully it stops there and we can kind of get through this together. But it is going to be interesting to monitor.
Very quickly before we get out of here, the Preds embark on a 4-game road trip here. They will play in Montreal tomorrow night, in Toronto on Thursday, Columbus on Saturday, and Minnesota on Sunday before they return home next Thursday. So they'll have 3 days off after these 4 games in 6 days. Huge road trip. Every game is huge at this point. The games don't get any easier. I think there's really only one game down the stretch where it's a cupcake game, and that's a home game against LA here in a couple weeks. Every other game, you're facing a team that is either in the playoff hunt or a team that has proven to be a tough team to play against. And tomorrow night against the Montreal Canadiens, no different. Pregame at 5, puck drop at 6. You got to get out of these four games of a possible 8 points, got to look at 5, 6, maybe even 7, right?
Yeah.
I mean, anything less than that, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, what did we talk about earlier? In these last 14, somewhere around 8-4-2 is what you need to go. I mean, yeah, I mean, you've got to pretty much operate at a, 6-7 out of every 10 points for the rest of the time here. And I know there's only 28 points left on the table. So that's kind of how you have to operate as you move down the stretch here. And look, I mean, this is an important stretch. And look, Montreal, you look at the standings, not great. Probably not going to have much of a chance to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. That hasn't meant anything with this Predators team. I mean, they've struggled against Anaheim. They lost to Detroit this year. I mean, by no means have they won every game that they were supposed to have won this year. So,
there's a little bit of dose of playing to their competition so far this season.
That's a problem, and that's got to be something that gets corrected. You mentioned L.A. I think that's a really dangerous game coming up down the stretch as well. So those are something that it's on the leadership group. It's on the coaching staff at that point to move past that. At some point, you got to get to the point where you're bringing the same level of energy and intensity every night. And this week, I think, is going to be a good litmus test for the Predators to see if they can do that.
Robbie Stanley, you can catch his work on NHL.com, the Locked On Predators podcast, the Smash Brothers, Fridays 6 to 7 p.m. on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and host of Morning Drive as well here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So you can catch his work in many different places. Robbie, thank you, as always, for spending time here in studio on Preds Insiders.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
For Robbie Stanley, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks for listening to Preds Insiders this evening. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio. Keep it locked right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game.